Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the Featured Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rick.
And today we're talking about season 2 of Tokyo Ghoul.
Yes, and it is almost everything I wanted, everything I hoped for. I did choose it because I do enjoy it. It is, for lack of a better term, perfect. And maybe not perfect. I might be exaggerating just a minor amount, but only a minor amount.
Just a smidge.
Yeah.
Just a tad.
Yeah. No, so we left off on quite arguably one of the best fight scenes in anime. Like, I've seen it on multiple top 10 lists where you have our main protagonist just destroyed, physically tortured, going through a mental break, essentially. And through this mental break comes to terms with who he is now. Not who he was, not who he will be, but who he is in this moment in time. And I thought that his hair turning white, his mental facility, where he's in this field of red just turning white, it signified a change that I thought was absolutely beautiful.
I thought it was a white field turning red.
It could be. It was last season, so I don't remember.
To bring it up, you know what's interesting about those flowers?
No, I just thought they were flowers.
It's going to be a really, really, really big stretch.
Okay.
I mean, massive, monumental. It's like I'm reaching for Pluto. All right.
Okay.
What if Promised Neverland?
Oh, no. Oh, dear Lord. Why'd you got to go there?
Because of that flower.
Oh, geez. That's rough. Okay, continue, because I have no idea where you're going with it.
The end result of the ghouls fighting, and they just overtake, and then they continue to evolve.
Oh, that's...
dark turn.
Very, but that's amazing fan fiction.
Right?
Imagine if you had a good writer. Oh!
Because that flower is the same flower in The Promised Neverland.
I did not make that connection.
I could be wrong. I could totally be wrong. I would not be surprised if I was wrong, but...
I kind of want you to be wrong, but at the same time, I want you to be right. Like, that's a damn good stretch.
So, before we continue to get into this, season 2, Tokyo Ghoul, also known as Route A, came out January 2015, ran all the way through March 2015, which actually is not too far off from when season 1 came out. Season 1 came out in July 2014, ran through September.
Yeah, when I originally chose this, I honestly thought that season 1 and season 2 were just season 1, because it does not give you too much time off to think.
Right. And the producers for it were Marvelous AQL, and studio for it was Studio Pierrot. Source is a manga, and genres are action, mystery, horror, psychological, supernatural, drama, and seinen.
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
So also in season 2, we got a lot of questions answered. A lot of questions answered from that were there from leftover from season 1, but also you got questions asked and answered almost roughly the same amount of time in season 2, which turned out great. I thought it was wonderful that they actually did that. They didn't just kind of leave it.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I thought that the way they did things was set up in such a manner that the questions you did have were not lingering. And I felt like this season, while the ending is poetic, in my opinion, the ending is sincere. Up until very recently, I thought that was the end of the anime. I thought that it was meant to be left open in a very satisfactory way. However, I feel like every question we had in season 1 and every question that followed because of the answers in season 2 were completed in season 2.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It felt very isolated, if you will.
Most of the answers did get resolved. One of the ones, and I feel like season 2 really kind of helped back up one of my theories on it, which is Kaneki.
Mm-hmm.
He's just basically one of a series of people that are basically kind of like an experiment. And this is like kind of hammered away or chiseled at a little bit, hinted at, you might say, when the twins came up and they also have one eye and they call him, Kaneki Ken, brother. Or
yeah.
And the doctor in the background says, you know, wants them to basically go and get him.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's still under the assumption, and we're still going to call it like it is like that Risa is dead. However, there's still, I feel like there's still enough room in there that it's not a definitive answer that she's dead, that she's actually still very much alive.
Yeah. The way I kind of got it was, so just transferring the organs over from a ghoul to a human, I don't think would be enough to turn the human. You'd have to turn the receptors in the lower back. You'd have to transfer that. But I also don't think doing just that would allow for a human to control them. So I have a feeling, and I have no basis for this, but I have a feeling that a portion of the brain was also transferred over. And the reason I have this feeling is, why else would he have Rizu's like psyche implanted in him as well?
Well, the same could be said for Jason, because he was also fighting a little bit with Jason's psyche too, and he picked up the finger cracking from him as well. And
I just thought that was good.
And it had to do, he actually ate him.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, he did. Oh yeah, he did. But I just thought that was part of him going crazy. I thought what he did there was the same thing that happened to Jason, where they broke him down physically, mentally, emotionally, and built him back up to what he wanted to be. And not really what he wanted to be. I felt like he broke, and by him accepting Ryuzu in his mind and becoming essentially one with her, his mind went from, and you are, if memory serves, you are correct, it went from white to red. It went from a pure landscape, a pure innocent landscape, to a horrific bloody mess. And in order for him to survive, what he did is he latched on to a combination of Ryuzu and him. He does not want to eat people, but he is willing to eat ghouls. He has to eat to survive. It tastes horrible. However, sustenance, it is something that will keep him going. It is something that will gain him power. He has an immense desire to eat because of her. And he latched on to her personality as well as Jason's personality, which is why he's got the cracking of the fingers and whatnot. But it's, in my mind, it's just somebody who wanted to become strong. So he latched on and copied, if you will, those he saw as strong around him. You know what I mean? And who's stronger than the woman who everybody was like, she's stupid strong, and Jason, the one who caught her, you know? I personally think if he would have found the owl, and the owl was part of that as well, he might have even taken a...
Jason?
No. Our main character.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, I mean, so the one that they refer to as owl is actually two different people.
That's what you got out of that?
Well, it is.
I thought it was like father, like son kind of thing, like an inherited name.
Well, I mean, technically it's like father, like daughter.
You know what I mean? Like, but it's passed. Yeah, it's passed down.
But, I mean, I think, and they didn't really elaborate on this too, and I think part of the problem is that we just don't have the fundamental understanding of it. Why Jason's psyche is a part of Kaneki, I think it has to do with the fact that he cannibalized Jason, that he actually ate him, because they kept heavily, even though they didn't touch on it in season one, that it was like a really big taboo, because basically you saw a couple of different people talk about it, or they were going through it, and it didn't seem like it was a giant taboo for a ghoul to cannibalize another ghoul. But in this one, they really do heavy foreshadowing for it, and talk really big about how that is a taboo.
Yeah, they were super. Not only were they super against it, it was very obvious in the patterns that they were doing that they're like, look, this one, don't do it. Two, it's not looked well upon, no matter which way you look at it. And that I thought was kind of interesting, because if it was such a taboo, you would think, I don't know, me personally, it would have been spoken about when he first did it. Like, it only seemed like a taboo when someone decided to have a taste for that. Like, right. it only became a problem when once they realized, oh, it wasn't a one-off. They're actually going after us on purpose.
Right. And what's interesting is we only know about the one cannibalistic point. So he only cannibalized Jason. We don't know about the others, if there are any others. But it's basically such a rare or monumental or scary thing that it's heavily talked about throughout the whole season, almost just about. I feel like that was a very large focal point for it.
Yeah, I agree. So my question is, did it come? I'm foggy on the details. Did it come about organically, or did it happen because someone witnessed him doing it?
I think it came about organically because every time they talked about it, they just said it was a rumor, that they heard a rumor that Kaneki cannibalized Jason, that he actually ate Jason. And every time it's brought up, it's like, yeah, the rumors are that he's actually been cannibalizing ghouls, or he's been doing this. And then every time they talk about it, I feel like if you cannibalize ghouls, I feel like what ends up happening is
you become a little bit stronger. I think
you start going crazy.
Well, he already was crazy.
No, I mean, like, even more so. Like, you start losing more of your grip on sanity, because whenever they were talking about it, or whenever someone mentioned it or something like that, they would show him in a very distressed mental state, just about. Where they would talk about it in such a way that was like, you aren't going to be you anymore. You are going to be someone or something else completely if you do this. Or that's how they're talking. It's like, if you continue to do this, you're going to, in a manner of speaking, die.
I could see that. But so, you know how you, in order to use, what did they call it? The Kangi? Not Kani? The blood abilities, let's call them.
Right.
In season one, I vividly remember the one that, so the doctor, when the doctor's one had cut a ghoul, it absorbed the blood and became slightly stronger. That was my train of thought, and that was my line of thinking about how if you consume ghouls, you become stronger. And I thought I noticed that Kanagi was getting stronger slightly. Now, it could have just been he was just accessing more of the strength he always had. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just assumed, given my line of thought, of course, that the more ghouls you consumed, the more ability you had. But that comes back to, if you'll remember, also season one, maybe it was because he was still part human when the gourmet was trying to eat him as he was eating the chick. The other waitress came in, took a bite out of him, and all of a sudden could use her ability in the church.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, she took a bite out of him. So from season one, yeah, I know who you're talking about. You're talking about Toka taking a bite out of Kaneki.
Yeah. But does that count because he was a ghoul at that point?
Well, I think he was still, because he's
half and half.
He's half and half. It plays a different game on there for that.
So,
which is why I think, like, the same thing, right? He's able to kind of get away with it a little bit more than others because
he's not a pure ghoul.
Right.
He's a hybrid.
Exactly.
Okay.
What's interesting also, referencing season one again, they had talked about like the potential or a rumor that a ghoul and a human had given birth to and then they revisited that story, and you found out it was actually the manager who was actually the basis for that rumor.
Yeah, he made it and he survived, and he was Owl. What I thought was kind of cool going to season two, I know, realize I'm jumping all over the place, but season two, you find out everyone in that cafe had a history of being a badass,
right?
Like, straight. It was funny because season one, you see, like, okay, you don't see the monkey. You don't at all. You don't see Monkey Man. No, you do. You do.
You see them, and you see the girl, and they're lightly touched, and they're how they talk or everything like that. It's like
lighthearted.
Yeah, it's lighthearted, and it's like, well, you know, he keeps saying or referencing like gorillas or or everything like that. And it's like, well, that's kind of weird, but whatever, you know, it's probably his quirk. To find out that those two, that they're both the leaders of rival gangs that supposedly hated each other. And they just kind of like vanished into thin air, you know,
until the time that was needed.
Exactly. And it's like Enteku, the Enteku coffee shop was like, old gang leader's, retirement plan. Right. Yeah. Here, you retire, done killing, murdering and everything like that. And, make some coffee. There you go. Well,
if you think about it, it makes perfect sense why it was so peaceful.
Right.
They had the power to back it.
Right.
Anybody who's anybody would know, would recognize these people. Like, well,
kind of.
If you were to walk into a room where Stephen Hawking was making coffee, Bill Gates was the server, and Elon Musk was in the corner cleaning up, are you going to make trouble there? These men, the people with that kind of influence could wreck you and everyone you know. So, I mean, they don't have physical power, obviously, but whereas in here they do, but like they had power that allowed them to have a semi-normal life and have peace in this sanctuary, let's call it.
Yeah.
So that's the only way I can kind of make a comparison to the real world out here, you know?
Yeah.
What I found kind of curious is nobody actually, once the gourmet knew how powerful everyone was in there and still came in and caused a little bit of ruckus, but he was never quite sane to begin with. You touched on a point where in season one they mentioned that the ghoul with the rumored one-eyed ghoul is superior to both human and ghoul, right?
Yeah.
What, in your opinion, would make more sense? A natural born ghoul is stronger than a made ghoul? My thought process was a natural born ghoul wouldn't necessarily have to consume humans in order to have access to their Kanagi or whatever you call it, because they had the blood in them to power it at all times. Whereas ghouls had to eat to be able to use their power. A conversion one would then, it's a one like our main character and like the ones with the twins and the doctor, those potentially would be superior in the sense that they could eat anything, which is why I was saying if he ate more ghouls, because he almost exclusively focused on ghoul and ghoul related items. He didn't attack the people who were attacking him. He attacked their weapons and then he consumed their weapons. He's like, it tastes like crap, but it's making me stronger. And that leads me to the point that I completely forgot about, that I skipped on, that I was trying to bring up. Every ghoul has to eat people in order to use their power. He's eating ghouls to use his power. So maybe that means a fuel source does not necessarily have to be human for him.
Right, but when he's consuming the ghoul, the armor, rather.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring
to. He's not in a right mental state. I mean, like, you can tell he's actually lost his mind. His white eyes are whited out completely.
Oh, yeah, he went to berserk mode.
Right, and he's completely lost his mind, and was having trouble even maintaining his sanity. And this is kind of reflected when he starts losing his mind again towards the end, when he's getting ready to fight and he fights to maintain control of his sanity. And that's why that berserker quote unquote mode doesn't come out. It's because when he's like that, he is in a complete state of insanity, which is why I'm saying if he eats ghouls, he's probably losing himself. Because when he lost his mind completely, it showed Riza and Jason basically pulling him down into a bloody depth.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, I mean, like, and I think while he's in that psychotic state, so to speak, he is compelled to eat ghoul and the weapons that are made from ghoul because it's ghoul.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my question, right?
All right.
And I have this, I had this question since like season one and into season two. It kind of showed that it can happen, that you can actually grow or evolve your ghoul power.
like stages, like maturity.
Right. But we've seen some like older ghouls and things like that who didn't have an evolved form. They just had like the one or whatever, right? But then you had the owl and you learn about the manager's background and it's like he just had the one thing and then it grew and evolved and became what it is. Like how at like what point or duration or stress or what have you, like how does that evolution come? Like how do you actually actively grow your power? And that's something that they never really explained or explored. They kind of showed you that it was happening, showed you that it did happen, showed you that it could be done, but they only really showed it for the owl or for the manager.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. It could be, if they only showed it for the manager, as you're saying, it very well could be a hybrid-esque thing, which is why they have, they're rumored to be more powerful, because they have the ability to advance.
But the manager is not a hybrid. The manager is just a ghoul.
His daughter was a hybrid, right?
Yes. Which you don't find out till the very end.
So. I'm going to go with an Uchiha thing here. It's a, he loved too hard. And that his love and hatred mutated his something or other.
Okay. So again, yeah. Under great emotional or stress, causes possible, it to evolve or something. I don't know. I mean, I would love
it. Makes sense.
I mean, that's like, the way is, they show it.
There is a season three. So, and I watched some of season three and it sucks that what you're saying now kind of makes sense for what I know happens then.
Yep. Despite the fact you haven't seen all of season three.
Yeah, no, I stopped halfway through. Well, I stopped like three episodes in because I didn't like it. I didn't understand why. And with the way that you're saying it now, it puts a different perspective. And that different perspective makes, it brings a potential light of understanding. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I like talking to you, to be honest.
It's because I'm enlightened.
Yeah. Yeah, let's call that.
Hey, look.
Just so you have a different perspective, and that different perspective happens to be right often.
Not often, maybe 50% of the time. 50%.
Fair. But, you know, given that viewpoint, it makes sense why they went the way they went on season three. However, we'll talk about that hopefully a little bit later, not this episode, of course.
Of course.
But God, man, if we could ever have a best guy, and like have it be a permanent best guy, his best friend, thick and thin. He knew what was going on from season one. And my girl and I are watching season one. And you know, because after the very first attack that his best friend was a part of, and he did everything he could to save, and he's like, I've got to eat you. I've got to eat it. And he of course was saved from that, but he comes to and he's like, oh God, did I eat him? Oh no, did I eat my best friend? And then he's introduced to his best friend again, who's asleep, quote unquote. Dude rolls over and he's like, oh my God. And then he spills a bunch of information that a human should not know. And his buddy opened his eyes and you know he heard everything.
Oh yeah.
He knows from the beginning what's going on. And then when he props up the manga that he's reading and talking about a secret organization and people going around in clown masks and whatnot. And you can see our main character go, oh no, oh no. He's like, but this manga's great. Like he knew.
Oh yeah. And again, you know, like I was saying from season one, it's like he knew right away. We already knew that he knew right away because he opened his eyes. And it's great. And I love that they carried it over subtly into season two. And everything, and at every point, it worked out to the betterment of basically Ken, including in the end. But how they ended it was great.
Seriously,
it was beautiful. It was a beautiful ending. It was done really, really well. I am actually really, really happy with how they ended it too.
I was as well. And it just, you are correct. I did like how it didn't seem like the background characters were stagnant throughout the entire season one and season two. Nobody stood still, if that made any sense, for the series.
Yes. And they kept their quirks too. So like Shu, the blue hair psycho guy, you know, the one that's got a weird infatuation with
eating people. Yeah.
No, with eating Ken
specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. Specifically eating Ken. And they kept that. They kept that quirk. They kept that feeling. And even when he was in the bathroom, like you remember season one, long time ago, Ken had bled on a handkerchief, and Shu is just straight up huffing that same handkerchief in season two at a random scene. And it's like, yeah, that dude's got problems.
Oh, hardcore problems. But it, you're right. Yeah.
And I felt it was also really great how you, when you were introduced to these three new characters, end of season one, Juzo, season two, the twins, you learn a background story about them, and it's not a big background story for the twins, but you learn Juzo's background story. Man, that's kind of a screwed up background.
They all are.
Well, you don't know the twins' background.
No, what I mean is like any background you actually get, it's a good one.
No, it's not. It's a pretty messed up background, which I feel like adds to the
it gives the purpose.
Yeah, it gives everyone a solid purpose, and the discussions that are had or made throughout, they're not pointless conversations.
Yeah, no, it didn't just. They didn't have conversations for our benefit as the viewer. They had conversations that benefited more, if that makes any sense. Like if you were to write a play and you had person one talk to person two in order to change person two's mind so that person two can talk to person four and five and change their mind, a domino effect of sorts. We got to see the beginnings of that. Yes. So it wasn't just a, oh, look, there is a lion. The lion will attack us. What shall we do? And all of a sudden, everyone knows the lion's going to attack. And you're like, that's horrible writing. Whereas here, you could see who knew what and where. And you got to see other people get this information, not necessarily real time, but you had our main character, or our main character in this particular idea, if you will, progress through the story. And people are catching up. Like he's introduced to other people who were not in the original conversation. And then he brings them up to speed. Course in a much shorter fashion, but then it just writing like that, storytelling in that manner, it seems much more organic, and it's much better to watch, in my opinion.
Yes. Yeah, I actually agree with you completely there. It was the writing, how it's done, how the characters are laid out, it's done really, really well. Even the music, when the music is there,
yeah,
it's prominent when it needs to be. It's nice. It flows with the actual show. It doesn't feel like it's kind of forced. It doesn't feel forced at all. Yeah,
it feels natural.
Exactly. And what's really, really cool, I don't know if you noticed, but every ending scene is different.
I did notice that.
Which is great. And in one of the ending scenes, it's like they're watching a TV, and on that TV, it's what happened like an episode ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you happen to watch? No, the ending scene. Are you talking about like after the credits? Because
the credits. There was only a couple after credits scenes.
In season one, they were there the entire time.
No, I'm not talking about season one. I'm talking about season two.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to say I was hoping
we've been talking about.
I know, but I mean, I was like, hoping they'd pull that through. Look, I was hoping they'd pull those little skits through.
Like three quarters of the show. All right, you missed the time traveling granddaughter.
It happens. It happens. Those vampire hunters came out of nowhere at the left field. They were so fast, you just didn't see them. You got to watch it again. If you watch it again, you'll understand where my point's coming from.
Excuse me while I go rewatch the whole series so I can point it out.
This is an hour-long show. What are you talking about? We're hour six and a half.
Right.
Oh, man. No, it's just the way they did everything. And I absolutely loved the fact we were talking about how characters progress off screen, characters progress independently of one another. The best friend, everything he did on screen, off screen, was to benefit his best friend, to get better, to get more, to get to a point where he felt he would be accepted as his friend. He goes at the very end, he's like, I don't care that you're a ghoul. I knew from the very beginning. I got goosebumps when I got that, when he was going through that. It was just like, wow, because the voice actors in here are just spot freaking on in both the subbed and the dubbed. And it was heartfelt. It was tear-jerking almost.
It was tasteful. It was really tasteful.
The thing that kicked me in the gut was the fact he was dying. And I loved the fact that at the end, Ken's insanity didn't win. He was like, you know what? This whole war, this whole thing that's going on, it's not worth my best friend's life. He's like, look, I'm the one you're going. He picks up his best friend who's been bleeding everywhere. And they end in the cafe. And it's just beautiful. And he picks him up and he takes him to the people who wanted to kill Ken. He's like, look, I'll surrender. I'll do whatever you want. Just please save his life. Please. And like it fades to white and you're just like,
Yep. So on a scale of up to 10, sir, how would you rate this?
As we said, writing, phenomenal. It answered many questions that I did not hope to get an answer for, that I was expecting to leave open-ended. It had very good writing. It had very good dialogue. It had incredible animation. Like I didn't see a single point where I was thinking they skimped. Production value, top-notch. Voice actors, amazing. Story, beautiful. Standalone for season two would be a low score. But if you take season one and season two together, I can't do that because I already did season one. So season two, standalone. If you've already seen season one, it makes sense. If you have not seen season one, they did not do a recap, which it's going to hurt the score a little bit. Not by much, though. I'm going to give it an 8. I think as a standalone 8.
Okay. I'm going to also go with the 8 simply because it was really great, really well done. It was very tasteful. I enjoyed it immensely. Definitely made me want to watch season 3. And it still left me with some questions that I'm hoping to get, that I'm hoping will get answered in season 3.
Like what?
And like what really happened to Ken. And obviously I know he's still alive because there's a season 3. But how they ended it, they didn't show him, they didn't show his hair, they just left it with a particular sound effect.
Yeah.
And I would like to know like how they're going to tie it all in, wrap it all up, and kind of, you know, bring everything basically to a close, because I think that's what basically season 3 will end up doing. It's just wrap everything up into a final closure, I hope.
I hope as well.
All right. So my choice for next week.
Yeah. That's surprising you choose Tokyo Ghoul season 3.
Yeah, actually I am. I am choosing.
Oh, I'm okay with that. I really am.
So that's my choice for next week. Tokyo Ghoul season 3 to wrap it up and complete it. Make it all nice and neat.
So I got a question. Are you choosing Tokyo Ghoul season 3 because you want to see it?
Yes.
After season 2? Like nice. That makes me feel good. That makes me feel really good. I'm glad that you liked it enough to want to see season 3 rather than go through the automated what slice of life do we want today wheel. So,
you mean the shows that you love and rate some of the highest on? Yeah.
You know what? I hated them at first. But I do. Yeah, they are nice. I look forward to when you do stuff like that now.
All right. So that's all the time we have for today. Hope you enjoyed this week's choice. If you feel like we missed something, didn't do it justice or anything like that, feel free to reach out to us, featuredanimepodcast@gmail.com, at Those Anime Guys on Twitter, Featured Anime Podcast on Facebook. You can also reach out to us on our Patreon feed or on Discord. We have a link for that. Patreon is patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. For $1 a month, you get access to bonus content. We talk before and after each show. Sometimes we even continue to talk about the anime even after we're done recording the episode. Just ramble on about things that we really want to hammer away at and talk about other things. Just today we talked about the Ring Fit Adventure, going to the gym, exercising, and how Rick's usually late to the party when it comes to buying a console.
Not the truth.
But if that's the kind of thing that you really like, or you just want to show us some love, patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. And until next time, I'm Jack.
And I'm Rick. And hopefully we get to see you next time. Otherwise, we might have to hunt you down and eat your face. Later.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.